You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 132 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Natalie. Natalie, welcome to the podcast.
Hiya.
Thanks so much for coming on.
That's okay.
We are here to talk about your daughter, Esme, and her experience with Hirschsprungs. And it's been, well, quite a journey so far. Please start from wherever you would like.
She's definitely stolen the limelight on this one. Esme's she's a year and a half. She's a little bit over a year and a half. She'll be two in August. And she was 5 days old when they put a stoma in. She actually was born in the Conquest Hospital in Hastings. And at 2 days old, she ditched me and took off to Brighton Hospital, which is actually a 2-hour drive from where we live because we live in the sticks, and left me behind, which was really traumatic actually. And she was blue lighted up to Brighton. Her stomach was quite swollen. She was actually born like 2 months early, and she never went to the toilet. And when I got up to Brighton, she was put into the Trevor Mann baby unit, which was absolutely phenomenal. If anyone's ever been up there, they are fantastic. There was all sorts of babies up there that were, some of them were 22 weekers. Like, it is insane what they can do in there. She was 5 days old when she had her stoma first put in, and she was 3 weeks old when she was diagnosed with Hirschsprungs, which I'd never, ever heard of in my life. And that's actually how I came across you on TikTok, who shed some light, because I had no idea anything about it. I thought instantly when they told me that it was a disease of like the intestines, that they would cut it out and she'd be fine and the disease would be gone. But that's not the case. So we've had her pull through surgery as well, and she's had her stoma closure. Her pull through surgery was not straightforward at all. As I said, she was in there for 11 hours and we had to have it in Southampton, which is 3.5 hours away from me. They closed her up, realized she had more ganglion cells, and opened her back up again to get the rest of it. But she's a little trooper actually. She, even though like she has so much going on all the time, we've actually got to have further treatments and whatnot, she's always so happy. Like, you would not think that she struggles or anything like that. She is such a happy little girl. We've literally just done a massive fundraising thing for Ronald McDonald House, which we always stay in, and she's greeted everybody with a smile on her face. She loves the attention, absolutely loves it, even from all the nurses. And we just raised just under $4,000. We've done quite good. But also we're trying to raise awareness, because I don't know many people with Hirschsprungs. I don't. It is so rare. And we were lucky when Esme was actually diagnosed. There was another little boy that was in the Trevor Mann baby unit, who was also too diagnosed with Hirschsprungs at the same time. And they were the only two that year in Brighton. So we actually, I do think things happen for a reason, that actually we've got a family, that Esme will grow up with a friend that understands her. So that is like the most beautiful thing. But at the moment, she's doing okay. We are recovering from a bug, which I do find that it's not a 48-hour game. She's been recovering since last Friday, and it's been a week so far of her being ill, which is not fun.
No, we are susceptible people with Hirschsprungs. Our immune systems aren't as great as other people, so it can take us a little bit longer to get over things, I guess.
I don't even know where she got it from because I'm a hermit. I don't really go out that much. And like we do, I'm very vigilant. I always wash your hands. I always keep everything incredibly clean. The only thing I could think of, it was airborne when I went into the hospital to like have a checkup, and then she must have caught it in the area because I have no idea where she got it from. But that's one thing I will say is that she's so susceptible to stuff, and unfortunately, she does blow it out of proportion when it comes to a bug. So if someone has a bug and it's like a 48-hour thing or 24-hour thing, she will hold on to it for a very long time, and she will recycle it. So she will get rid of it for a little bit and then get it back straight away if someone else gets it in the house. So yeah, it's a pain.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. Really sounds like it. If we go back to, so diagnosed after, or yes, diagnosed after
3 weeks it was,
3 weeks, which is quite, I mean, it's the same time I was taken to diagnose, which is quite a long time, I think. So were they sort of testing for other things, or was it just?
It was the basically when they did the biopsy, it was sending it off. So they don't test for it in Brighton. They sent it off to London Hospital and then they confirm it. And then it takes a while for them to get back to Brighton. I think they run under two different trusts. I'm not entirely sure. But they have to send it off. We weren't going anywhere. We was in hospital for a long time. Like I said, Esme was prem. So, she was, do you know what? She was actually quite a healthy weight. She was a 5 pounder. She did drop to like 4 pounds, but she was quite a healthy weight. But we was in hospital for about 5.5 weeks, I want to say. So we stayed in Brighton. No, it was in 6 weeks. So we stayed in Brighton for five, and then we came to the Conquest. She caught a bug, and they thought she had sepsis, and then the NG tube went back in and everything else, and we was there for like a whole other week while because she stopped weeing. I didn't even know that was a thing until I had Esme, but she completely stopped weeing, and the stools were like really loose. Her stoma at the time was really overactive, and actually quite uncontrollable. But yeah, it's so weird to think now that she doesn't have a stoma anymore. But what we do have is like we're currently at the moment going through, so on the 15th she has had this before, but she was small and we could do it when she was small. But because she's big now, she will fight, and she can perforate her bowel, so she's going to have a bowel washout on the 15th, and she's also going to have dilation treatment start again. So yeah, I'm a bit gutted because when she had her stoma closed, I think it was, when was it, May of last year, and we've had dilation treatments weekly up until January of this year, and we finally got celebrated that she was no longer going to have them, and I was really, really happy. I was like, you're doing fantastic. And we did a little celebration and everything, and basically Esme's never been able to do a solid poo ever. She struggles. And we kept going back in, like I was like, something's not quite right. And then I think it was 2 weeks ago, we ended up in hospital because Esme took, I think it was like 18 hours to get a poo out. She couldn't get it out. She does drink coconut water daily. She loves coconut water, and she has Movicol and things like that. So she does have medication. But the problem with Esme's pull through is that there is like a suture, I think it's called a suture, but it's about 10 centimeters up where they had to go back in. And they think that she's retaining poop where it's a bit tight up there and it's not all coming through. So I think that like she started vomiting and she couldn't go. And even with medication, and then they were like, she's going to have dilation treatments and bowel washouts. We've got, I think, 3 sessions. They're, my surgeon for Esme is absolutely phenomenal. Like, if anyone ever has her, Dr. Sheaf, she is absolutely amazing. She is quite confident that it can be controlled by medication, like bowel management medication and stuff. If not, then it could possibly mean surgery, which is the worst case scenario. But I'm hoping that these treatments will hopefully resolve what's going on, and then we can do medication, obviously. But yeah, like I said, she gets sick and then she gets it quite bad. And I feel like if she's not getting all the poo out, she's retaining the virus, like, as well. There is that. So
Yeah, all going on then.
yeah, it is. It is all going on. And it doesn't help because she's a remarkable little girl. Like, because she was so used to having a stoma, I think she was about 8 months old and she started using a potty because she refused to, like, she wouldn't go in her nappy. She didn't like poo in her nappy. But I think because her stools are quite acidic, when they first come through, they burn her skin. So she started going on the potty. But where you have like a flare up, I think this week, I think I changed in one day like 28 nappies. She just couldn't stop. And like, she's very good. She hydrates herself incredibly well and she does drink Dioralyte. She'll just do it. She like knows her body. She's so smart. But yeah, where it's like so aggressive sometimes and she's got like no time. The potty training goes straight out the window. But when she's normally fine, she will go on the potty and it's, yeah.
That's amazing though, for say a year and a half, nearly two, to know
Yeah.
your body that well
Yeah.
is incredible. I mean that's amazing.
She does, like the that's where I get a bit worried because she's such a massive foodie. She's like me, she loves her food, but she'll stop eating like altogether, but she will drink loads and loads of fluids. Like, the fluids will triple if she's not feeling well. And I don't know where she gets that from because it's not me. I'm terrible with fluids. And she'll drink loads, which is like probably what actually keeps her out of hospital sometimes. And we do like when I say my surgeon for Ez is absolutely phenomenal. She will do anything she can to keep us out of hospital, to isolate her and keep her safe. So she will actually, we just recently, like I said, she did have a bug. Like I said, she's still not 100% now. She's had like, she slept a lot today. So obviously trying to recoup some energy. But I emailed her secretary. Within an hour, she got in contact with me and we had a care escalation plan in place because Esme's flare up was so violent this time that she actually started passing blood where the lining of her intestine had worn away. That was the protective layer. And where her poos were so acidic, she ended up actually having black stools, type 7, which is like really, really watery. And it was a lot. And it was just because her intestines began to get sore with the amount she was going, which I never actually thought that was a thing until recently. It just was going through all too quick. But she has started eating now, but she's, like I said, she's really smart, so she'll like have crackers or plain foods like toast, things like that. I do try and offer her other things just to see if she's feeling better. And she'll like if she wants to have a bit of pizza or something else, but she will always go to like the plain food still. So I always know like you're not 100%. She's not talking fully. She can. She just chooses not to. That's a different story. She's very selective. I'm gonna put it down to her older siblings. But she at this age still knows her body and she does indicate sometimes if she does have tummy cramps that she puts my hand on her belly and she gets me to rub her belly. But it's just, I feel like it's just, she's so used to it that like, this is the norm for her that she just, I feel this way. I'm going to do this. And it's incredible because, yeah, she's going to be two in August, and she does stuff that I, even now, if I feel rubbish, I'm terrible at drinking. I'm terrible with eating bland foods. Like, I probably do the worst thing possible that makes me write more poorly. And my daughter would drink Dialyte. Like,
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. I think you're right. A lot of us are, especially when we get to being adults, we're so bad at drinking. To be honest, I'm the same. I should drink way more than I should, especially having Hirschsprungs. But you just get into horrible habits. But that's amazing that she knows her body, that well, that she goes, well, like the bland foods you said, you know.
Yeah.
And sort of building that immune system, I guess, back up until she feels better.
It's really smart. I mean, her surgeon said the same, to be fair. She was like, Esme knows her body. Even though she doesn't speak it out loud, she was like, even when she comes into hospital now, like, she knows what she can and can't have. She will choose the better option. I'm like, I wish I could be like that. I'm not. I'm actually, I've just not long found out I'm pregnant again.
Oh, congratulations.
Which I'm nervous about, because obviously we're going to have the baby in Brighton, but I'm coming up to 13 weeks now. But obviously there's a risk of Hirschsprungs again. So I'm nervous. Obviously, like, now I'm a doctorate in a way with theirs. But like, I don't drink at all. And my doctor's like, you need to drink more. You have to drink more. And then there's Esme, who sees my squash in a glass, and it's like a massive pint glass, and she'll drink it. She'll drink the whole thing. Like, she'll just help herself. Like, it's mad. I don't know where she gets it from, because she eats healthy as well. And me and Jordan aren't healthy people. She loves her vegetables. Like, she goes straight for like green veggies all the time, like broccoli, peas, things like that. And I'm like, that's actually really good for your gut. So someone must be telling you, because like a good diet. So she eats a lot of fish and things like that that are quite helpful, because I find that onions cause a flare-up for her, yet she loves onion rings, but they don't seem to cause her a flare-up. But onions seem to set her off, or leeks, like anything from that sort of family, and she will flare up.
Wow.
Which is amazing. Yeah. That's the only thing I've sort of found out. Oh, and cheap oils. If someone cooks chips in really cheap oils, it goes straight through her. She's not very She's not very appreciative of that because she does like
Some good
the
quality oil, though.
odd chip. Yeah, she's got very very fine taste.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong
No.
with that at all. But you just back on what you said, just congratulations. I've never had someone announce a pregnancy on a podcast before.
No,
Congratulations.
thank you. Thank you. I wasn't sure if I actually I've been telling everyone because I've always wanted two kids, but like when Esme got diagnosed and everything that we've gone through this year with Es, I was like, I'm surprised I haven't got PTSD, to be fair, because it has been traumatic every time. We do crack jokes over time because I've got a very warped sense of humor. It's our way of like surviving, I suppose. Like obviously when I say, oh, she ditched me to go to the hospital, a different hospital, that was the most traumatic time of my life. I was an absolute wreck because when we was in hospital, they didn't tell me how serious it was. I think they just didn't want me to worry. And when Esme was put in the ambulance, the lady that was taking her up there turned around and went, no, this is critical. And they went. And I was left behind because I wasn't discharged. I wasn't allowed to go. I, from 20 weeks of pregnancy, couldn't walk properly because Esme was on an old sports injury. So I was actually on crutches. And they said to me, if I had gone to full time, I would have been on a wheelchair because I was such a fall's risk. I kept losing feeling in my legs. She was literally on a sciatic nerve. It was really bad. So I don't know how this pregnancy is going to go. So I might be doomed. But,
Hopefully not.
my hips already started to go, so I'm like, I feel it. But yeah, she was carted straight off, and it was really traumatic. But like me and Jordan always crack a joke that she just wasn't getting enough attention, so she went elsewhere for it. She wanted everyone to see her. So, but it was, it's been like really, really tough. But at the same time, like I just think some of the nurses, and especially like I said, I can't rate my surgeon enough because she's absolutely phenomenal. I'm so glad that we ended up with her because surgeons are the most impossible people to get hold of, yet she's easier to get hold of than my GP. She's always on the line, and she even when we was in Portugal, we went to Portugal last year, Esme's first holiday. We got 2 days of grace with her before she got two different strains of E. coli and we was in a spill. But even when she ended up in hospital, Dr. Sheaf was on the phone to that hospital we was at with her emergency care plan. We had emergency antibiotics with us anyway. And there was a care plan in place to get her safe to fly home to get a further treatment. And it was phenomenal. Like she was like, this is my patient, this is what you do, I know her literally inside and out. And I was just like, go on, Sheaf. Tell him. But she was phenomenal. And yeah, she's very passionate, so I have to say, like, I mean, every time, it's taken me a long time to come to terms with Esme's diagnosis, because when you're a parent and you first hear like all this stuff, for me, I think I went into shock and it never sunk in. So she was telling me, like, literally, I think some point last year, about 6 months ago, I'd probably say more than 6 months ago, but she was like, Nat, I did say to you that she's going to come in and out of hospital. The three surgeries aren't going to be the last thing. Sorry, my cat's like, go away.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The surgeries aren't going to be the last thing, because I kept getting in my head, right, three surgeries and we're done. Three surgeries and we're done. And then obviously the weekly treatments come in, and I was driving 2 hours up the road so that Esme could have dilation treatment. So I kept thinking, oh, I thought this was going to be over. And she was like, Natalie, I've explained to you so many times that Esme is going to need medical treatment throughout her life. A little bit of assistance here and there. It's not going to be all over. To come to terms with that was really, really hard for me. And Jordan, it kind of sunk in for him. He kind of accepted it straight away. But for me, like, she was saying things that she told me previously. And I was like, you didn't tell me that. You didn't tell me that. She's like, I have told you. But it just never... It's like she told me, but I glazed over with it, because I don't know if it was like a state of shock, because I was just like, not my girl. It's so weird. But despite everything, she always surprises everyone. Like with her 11-hour surgery, she was out within 3 days. Like no one expected that. We thought we were going to be in for at least a week. She was up and playing the next day. Like, she just had full stomach reconstruction surgery, and it was like it was nothing. Like, she was so resilient. I mean, babies are anyway, but she takes it in her stride. I mean, even now when we go into the hospital, she just sort of just hands her hand over ready for the cannula. She just get it over with. Just do what you need to do. She always has the ump with them, but she knows what they're going to do, and she just lets them do it. Although the temperature thing, never lets them take their temperature. She still kicks off over that. And I'm like, you just let them put a cannula in, like, but you won't have a thermometer underneath your armpit.
I mean, it makes no sense to me, but she does. Sounds like she does just amazingly well, you know, for someone so young to understand so much about a condition so rare. Is incredible.
She understands herself more than I do, and I've done so much research on it now that I'm just like, how? But I think she's just, I mean, she surprises me all the time. Every day is a surprise, and I'm just like, I always think, like, when we're having a flare-up, we just don't, there's no point going out, because you're changing her all the time and stuff. There's no point going out. And I keep thinking, oh God, she's going to be so grumpy, and she's going to be like really upset or things like that. And then she'll just be the brightest smile on her face, or she'll try and play hide and seek with you, which she's terrible at. I have to pretend she's really good, but she's not. She just thinks if she hides her face like this, or she hides a blanket over half her face, that if she can't see you, you can't find her.
I mean, logically, that makes sense for a one nearly two-year-old. That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm so mean. And it's not just that, she laughs, so she gives herself away every time. So I'm like, you're really not that good at it.
Maybe she just doesn't understand the game yet.
I just hear her, like, her little shoulders go, and it's just like, are you serious?
Oh, as long as she's having fun.
Oh, she does. Yeah, no, she does. Every day. Every day she is. I mean, like, when she's been, like I said, really ill recently, she's still smiling. She's still on the go. And I was poorly as well, so obviously she got it straight back off of me after I caught her bug. And she was stroking my hair and patting my back, like all the things that I do to her to make her feel better. She started doing it to me, and I'm like, oh my God, baby, you felt like this? Like, and then I think, oh my God, you must have felt worse because of the Hirschsprungs. Like, you must have had cramps and all this lot alongside it. And you're like a Terminator. I'm a massive baby compared to you. Like, I'm like dying. And you're just like, mama, like, come on, no, mama. Like, and I'm like, how are you still going? Like, you're amazing.
You do find that with a lot of, not just Hirschsprungs, but a lot of chronic illness children, that they are very resilient, very high pain tolerance threshold. So what tends to hurt, I find this a lot with Hirschsprungs people anyway, that what tends to maybe hurt other people a lot maybe hurts us less, because I guess we've had so many surgeries and a lot of invasive stuff, and we do get the stomach cramps, and we kind of, I'm not saying we're superhuman or anything like that, but we do kind of, our pain tolerance is probably at a dangerously high level.
Yeah, I feel like she's desensitized.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, like, because there's been times where I'm like, oh my God, doesn't that not hurt her? And then she's just, no. And I'm like, you know, where most kids would be, you know, in bits, Esme just takes it in her stride. Like, this is like her everyday life. She just, she just, I don't know how she does it, honestly. She's always got a smile on her face, even when she's like interacting with people and stuff. And that's the only thing I will say, is like, sometimes what gets tiring is that a lot of people, like, I suppose were quite naive to it. I was, when I first heard of it, but it's like having to explain to them that, you know, a bug's not just a bug. If she gets a cough and a cold, she might fight it, but if it affects her gut, then we're done for. Like, and it's like, you know, Hirschsprungs is with them, because the amount of people that have gone, oh well, she's cured now, and I'm like, I wish. I know the hospital ward so well now that literally I know the nurses. I phone up and they're like, you're right, Esme's mum. Like, they know me as Ez's mum. How is Ez? How is she? And when she goes in, even when she's ill, they'll still high five her. She'll walk in with her hand there ready to like high five. And I'm just like, how? Like, you're sick as a dog and you're still high-fiving people as you're coming through. But
amazing.
I think it is just so, she's so desensitized to it, because even with this bug recently and her bleeding, like, you know, having internal bleeding, she still fine. Like, you would not think, if you saw her in the street, that she's had all this going on, because she's happy.
She's so happy. I mean, that's so good to hear. Really good to hear. Just how resilient she is, which is fantastic. There is something you said right at the beginning, because this isn't your first interview that you've done. You've also done some radio.
I did.
We'll talk a little bit about that.
So I wanted to give back as much as I could, because to be honest with you, if I could give so much to, like, her Dr. Sheaf, who saved her life, because if she didn't have the stoma, they told me it would kill her. Basically, she was very, very poorly. Her stomach was so swollen, and she was at the point that sepsis was a thing and whatnot. It was quite worrying, very worrying times, and very uncertain. I would do so much for them guys, because, like, I could have, like, had no life with Ez, basically, if it wasn't for those people. And, like, just Ronald McDonald in general, like, they've been phenomenal. Every time we go up there, they send me a care package just to take care of myself, because as a mum, you just go into survival mode when your baby's sick. And I don't function. I don't take care of myself. I'm literally Nurse Nat, because she instantly goes into an isolation room, and they don't want to make too much contact with her because she could catch other stuff. So she's so susceptible. So, you know, this week recently, since Friday, I've been changing her hourly, because she's been going hourly, well, more than that. And that's like 24 hours around the clock. Jordan so happened to be away, so it was literally just me on my Jack Todd. But every time I go up there, they always take good care of me. And they're always like, are you eating? Are you drinking? That's Esme, sorry. If you can hear in the background, she's kicking off. It looks like she just tried to get up the stairs and then Jordan's just caught her and then took her down. Sorry. But yeah, so you know, they've always done so much for me. So I started doing hairdressing. So I've always had high corporate jobs. I've always done quite well for myself. But when I had Esme, it was quite clear that I wouldn't be returning back to work because I couldn't be reliable. As soon as she goes into hospital, I don't know how long we're going to be in there for. We could be in there for a day or it could be weeks. And I didn't want to like commit. So I started doing hairdressing and I said to them in my interview for the college, which was so weird going back to college at my age, by the way. Wouldn't it is good, but at the same time, I was a young girl in there. It was I said to them, I want to do a fundraiser and raise money and take care of mums like myself that just don't take care of themselves when they're in hospital. I'd like to do haircuts and raise money for Ronald McDonald. So my college tutor, Iris, has a partner who works for Ashdown Radio, which is a local radio station. He's actually got quite a big following. A lot of people do listen to him. He's very good. He used to work for Arrow FM years ago, so he's known already. Very energetic lad, by the way. I don't know how he's buzzing without a coffee in the morning, but he's always buzzing. So yeah, he's absolutely phenomenal. He actually raises money for St. Wilfrid's. He's got an autoimmune disease, and they put him in at first before he didn't get diagnosed. He was basically put into St. Wilfrid's Hospice and was very, very sick. And they said that he would never walk again or things like that. He was very ill. So he's raised a lot of money for them. And when he heard Esme's story, he wanted to raise money for her. So what turned out to be something small, which was cuts for a cause, ended up a whole month of May, we were doing haircuts, all money going to Ronald McDonald. And then we did a pub quiz. We did a radiophone, which Ryan did, which was 27 hours on a radio station. And we just raised just under 4K. I've got another pub quiz to do, which is in the Robin Hood in Icklesham. Amazing pub, great burgers. They do such good food there. And his son actually at the moment is going for a diagnosis of Crohn's. So he actually was asking me about Esme stuff because they're not too far apart in terms of like what you can and can't eat. They're still affecting the gut. And his son is a teenager who just eats whatever and then pays for it afterwards. But he was like, what do you do with Es? Obviously, I've got a little bit of leeway here because she's younger and I can sort of mold her to like, this is good for you, have some fish and things like that. But yeah, he's part of Ronald McDonald in Brighton and he stays there all the time. So we ended up doing these massive interviews, which I did give you a shout out, by
Thank
the way. And yeah, it was. Yeah, it's just blown up, really blown up. And now it's becoming a yearly thing where I do it yearly.
you.
Yeah,
Amazing.
so it's, I seem to be like a little bit of an ambassador, but I would like, ideally, if I do this, that one day that Esme might actually speak out and help others. That like, I do it from a parent's point of view, to help parents because, you know, it's tough. No one wants their baby going for any of this sort of stuff, and no one wants to see their kid constantly going in and out of hospital, being poked and prodded, told that they've got to have certain amount of procedures. Nobody wants that. Like, I never thought I'd see inside a children's ward, like, or be in a children's hospital. It's a whole different world. When you're a first-time mum, because Esme was my first, she's got older siblings, they're her half brothers. Love my boys still, but yeah, my first time having a baby, and she has really given me some like PTSD over it all. But I didn't really have anyone. I mean, obviously, I watched your podcasts a lot, and they did give me a little bit of like they put me at ease because. Oh, you're someone that's lived with it your whole life. And all I kept thinking was like, what's Esme's life going to be like? So it'd be nice, like obviously there are different situations, like everyone's got different cases, everyone's got different stories. I've learned that no two bodies are the same. when it comes to this. And you're literally finding your feet all the time, what they can and can't do with certain things, how they react to certain things. I've learned so much about bowels and poop, and like I'm now like a nurse, so I often say like type 7 or type 6, or like I know all the types on the Bristol poop chart, but it is what it is. But it's just like, it's a whole different world that I never understood when I first come into it, and now I should probably get a doctor's wage at this point. But yeah, I would like to help parents, but I would like Esme eventually to help people that are in her situation, or talk about it like you do. Maybe come in as a sister herself.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm still doing this podcast in many years' time, which we'll see. Then, yeah, she's absolutely welcome to come on.
Yeah.
Absolutely welcome.
It did help me massively because, honestly, it's you're like literally, it's like opening Pandora's box, because yeah, I was taken back by it all. I'd never heard of it, Hirschsprungs. I kept calling it hash burgers for a while, and actually, funny enough, so did Ryan from Ashdown Radio, and it made me laugh because me and Jordan said that for ages, and then our doctor was like, no, it's Hirschsprungs. It's not hash burgers.
Yeah.
I was like, what is hash burgers? So, you know. But yeah, we've done so much already, and I just would love to help. That's why I want to raise awareness, but also just like be someone that speaks out. Eventually, it would be nice actually that it would be nice to see that male parents talk out about it, because my partner finds it really hard to talk about it. So it would be nice that actually, from a male's perspective, how they support their partner and their child that's going through it. It would be nice. I don't know. You might find someone that will, but
yeah, that is one of my aims in the future too. I mean, I have had some really, really good dads who come on, yeah. Really, really good. But those episodes are few and far between. And I think, you know, for probably reasons that people know already, you know, and a lot of cases, the mums are there with their child. Mm-hmm. And so they see everything and are probably they're able to say more because they're there and see everything. But like you said, you know, if the dad's at home taking care of, you know, everything else home life wise, yeah, that is a story to tell in itself. Thank you so, so much for coming on.
It's okay.
Been so, so good to chat to you, and obviously wish you, as Jordan, and the pregnancy all the very, very best for the future.
Yeah, no, thanks. And thank you for listening to me, because I do ramble on.
Nah. Thank you so much for coming on.
That's all right. I'll speak to you soon, okay? Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.